It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. It's not something that a lot of us want to think about just yet, except maybe skiers and our nearby resorts, but snow is already being forecasted this week for our friends in the Laurel Highlands. That means a lot of road maintenance in the winter months ahead. Joining us on the line is PennDOT District 12 Assistant District Executive Rob Dean, whose office is looking for 100 or more drivers and mechanics to meet that need. Rob, welcome to the Confluence.
Good morning, Kevin. Thank you.
Rob, is this a regular occurrence, the search for drivers at this time of year?
Yes, it is. We supplement our permanent workforce with temporary operators each winter through the hiring of temporary operators and temporary employees.
Mm-hmm. So is what your needs are this year more or about the same as usual at this time of year?
I would say that we're getting to the point where it's a little bit more than what we've traditionally needed in the past. The total need of what we try and hire is the same each year, but the folks that are available and applying for the jobs is getting lower, so we are looking for additional than we have in the past.
Mm-hmm. And so, as you said, this is to complement your regular full-time employees. So how many people are on the roads, ready to hit the roads, the mechanics, the maintenance personnel, do you have in District 12, would you say?
In District 12, we have about 311 full-time operators, about 36 mechanics in the four-county region, supplemented with some other classifications of employees. We're looking for about 104 temporary operators, as well as about six or seven temporary mechanic and mechanic helpers.
Mm-hmm. District 12 covers four southwestern Pennsylvania counties. Where do you need these temporary drivers and mechanics?
Actually, we need them in all four counties. Fayette, Greene, Washington, and Westmoreland County are all in need of temporary operators.
Okay. You said temporary. Are the drivers on call as needed? Are they full-time temporary? What's the status?
They are full-time temporary operators. They'll work full shifts from throughout the winter season, starting anytime now through the March-April time frame.
What do you mean by full-time shifts? You know, when we have a heavy snow, there are a lot of demands placed on our drivers, on our crews. Do they do extended shifts? What's the process?
Correct. Our crews work in the wintertime during snow events. They'll work two shifts, beginning at 4 in the morning till noon and noon to 8. And then as the weather necessitates, they'll extend their shifts either from midnight to 4 or 8 to midnight to cover the full 24-hour period.
Mm-hmm. You're actually holding a job fair today at your Greene County headquarters in Waynesburg. What should someone who might be interested expect?
When you come to the job fair, there'll be folks there. There'll be experienced operators, mechanics, and staff there to answer any questions you would have about employment at PennDOT. There'll be folks there to facilitate the application process. We will have computers available. You can apply online at the event with support and help if necessary to complete the application.
What qualifications requirements are an absolute must?
For our CDL operators, we need a CDL license with the air brake restriction removed, as well as we need the manual transmission removed as well, mm-hmm. The restriction.
Right, the CDL, commercial driver's license. So will there be a driver's road test? I mean, we don't have snow yet, so how do you simulate the plowing?
Right. What will happen is once you apply for a position and you'll come in for an interview, and during that interview, we will actually set up with an operator or prospective employee to get in a truck and actually drive one of our trucks through a road course, a guided road course, to show that their ability to perform and operate the truck. It'll be on the dry weather, but just to be able to drive. once they would be hired, they would be given extensive training for operating the features of the truck during plowing and spreading mud.
Our guest on the Confluence is Rob Dean. He's Assistant District Executive for PennDOT District 12, which is looking for snow plow truck drivers and mechanics. He's holding a job fair today from 11 to 7 in the Greene County offices in Waynesburg. Rob, what might you say are the biggest differences between operating a snow plow and maybe another commercial vehicle? Is it more fun? You're not just driving, you get to push some snow around.
Right. It introduces a lot of different challenges and techniques, but there is extensive training to operate the plow on the front, the spreader to delivers the salt and anti-skid material. It's an opportunity to serve the traveling public to provide safe and passable roadways.
Yep, safe and passable. Let's face it, all of us, we're used to, we're always glad to see those snow plows in front of us clearing the path rust to make the roads a little bit safer. And if these folks, as you said, they have to have commercial driver's licenses, they're probably glad to see the snow plows out there first, but now they would be really the first on the roads.
Correct. And it's an opportunity to for us to give back and to perform the duties we're assigned.
Mm-hmm. Officials here in District 11, which includes Allegheny, Beaver, and Lawrence counties, say they're still in need of drivers as well. Have you spoken with your counterparts in maybe other districts, whether it's to the east of you or up north? Are they also experiencing an annual shortage of drivers?
Yes, it's a scenario that's statewide. Each district's looking for additional operators to supplement our workforce in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. So you're trying to line up enough snow plow truck drivers. What else are you looking ahead to? What's the overall process like when you gear up for winter? I mean, you don't start in mid-October to prepare, do you? You start earlier?
No, we start actually whenever it's springtime, whenever we're done with the previous winter season, we begin rebuilding our plows, our spreaders, getting the equipment ready for the upcoming winter. We begin getting salt deliveries, anti-skid deliveries, getting our materials stockpiled to be able to be utilized. Mm-hmm. Throughout the month of October, November, we're performing dry runs. We're out investigating the roads, making sure that our operators are ready to go when the first flakes of snow fall.
So do you? Oh, I'm sorry. Rob, do you already have your supplies, the salt and other road materials?
The majority of those deliveries have been made, yes. Stand by. We're ready to go.
Okay. The city of Pittsburgh has a snow plow tracker to determine where its trucks are. Of course, we're talking about a much smaller geographic area than the four counties your district covers. Does PennDOT have something similar to sort of assess where your trucks are at any time?
Yes, you can log on to PA511, and you can see the location of a lot of the snow plows PennDOT has out along the roadways throughout the winter season.
Okay, is that for the citizen, or is that also a helpful tool for you back at headquarters to know where everybody is in case you have to pivot assignments, if you would?
It's for both. We utilize it for ourselves to make sure that we know where everybody's at and the needs that are out there. But for drivers along the roadway, they can best determine when the best time to leave the house, where the snow plow, has it been through or is it on its way, mm-hmm. so that they can travel on a treated roadway.
With a four-county district, and realizing a storm can hit the whole district, it can move through one or two counties and not be as bad in another, what's the process for how you determine how to deploy your equipment?
Well, we monitor the weather. We monitor the radar, look at weather forecasts, usually as the time leads on, and assign the folks. Each of the stockpiles that we have in the four counties are staffed with operators, foremen, and then we have management that reviews that, makes the decisions of when those operators and foremen need to be out in order to be prepared out ahead of the storm.
So is it done at the county level sort of because they're closer to the action, or is it done at the district level?
Most of it's done around the county level with the district input, but the county level is where it makes the final determination, as you said. The snow can hit portions of a county, the entire district. So we have regional managers, assistant county managers that review the weather and monitor in their particular area.
Rob, during the winter, do you have debriefs, say, after a storm, analyze how you did and what could be done differently for the next blast of snow?
Yes, we routinely go through and monitor. We keep an eye on the material usage. We monitor the material we have on hand for decisions that need to be made about acquiring more, keep status of trucks and operators so that we can be properly prepared for upcoming events.
Mm-hmm. So is the organization, is the department, is the district agile enough to make changes as the winter proceeds?
Yes, we're constantly making adjustments, constantly making changes to supplement, to ensure that we have the right resources available in the right locations.
Mm-hmm. Finally, Rob, do you have a more extensive review at the end of the season when the snow finally stops so you can prepare for the following winter, whether it's in procedures to do, additional equipment you might need, whatever?
Yes, at the end of each winter, we analyze how things went, look for opportunities for improvement, as well as the successes that we have with the changes and how the events transpired, so we know what we want to continue and if there's some changes that need to be made.
Rob Dean is the Assistant District Director for PennDOT District 12, which is holding a job fair today at its Waynesburg office looking for snow plow truck drivers. Thanks, Rob, and good luck this winter.
Thank you, Kevin.
I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
I'm Kylie Kaczynski. Still ahead on The Confluence. Traditional performing arts groups are reinventing themselves through interactive apps and festival-style programming. But is it enough to drive ticket sales? Plus, online con artists are bringing their scams to airports, tricking unsuspecting victims into buying bogus plane tickets. So what can the airport do to stop them? And just ahead, Steeler Nation is going global. What conversations would you like to hear on The Confluence? Send us an email with your suggestion at wesa.fm/confluence. You can find stories, conversations, and more from this and past episodes of the show on our website at wesa.fm/confluence.
I'm Katie Blackley with the Pittsburgh Almanac. This week in history, philanthropist and Dr. Francis Julius Lemoyne dies in Washington, PA in 1879. He's remembered for creating the first crematory in the U.S., building the Citizens Library in Washington, and for being an abolitionist. He renovated his home in 1850 so it could be a stop on the Underground Railroad. He also traveled around the country and advocated for the end of slavery. Lemoyne educated free slaves after the Civil War in a historically black college he helped start. The home still stands today in Washington and operates as a historic house museum. That's today's Pittsburgh Almanac.
NFL football is big business in the U.S., but a growing number of people are watching from places far, far away. I'm Maria Scappellato with the Pittsburgh Business Report on 90.5 WESA. The NFL is holding 5 international games this season, 4 in London and 1 in Mexico City. Growing that global fan base means big money for teams like the Steelers. Steelers Vice President of Marketing Ryan Hujak tells me outside the U.S., Steeler Nation is strongest south of the border.
Our biggest pockets of international fans, unquestionably number one, is Mexico. We are, by a number of metrics, the number one or most favorite team in Mexico. We have the largest social media followings in Mexico, and that's something we've been cultivating for a number of years.
So what have you been doing to keep those folks engaged?
We've been going down to Mexico every year and running a football camp. We've been doing that once a year in the spring. We take current players down, sometimes coaches, and we go down and we do a football camp down there. More recently, we have really focused on Spanish language content. So much so that we have turned an internship position into a full-time position. We have a full-time staff member who her sole job is to write Spanish language content targeted for our fans on Facebook in Mexico.
So from a financial perspective, how does having a strong base outside the U.S. strengthen the Steelers' bottom line?
The larger our fan base or the higher level of our engagement, it fuels our content platforms. We have a 24/7, 365 digital radio station that's available on our app. folks can listen to that anywhere they want to. Then our jobs on the sales side is to sell the advertising positions and the sponsorship positions to our corporate partners. So we would, you know, the more traffic we receive, the more impressions we receive, that certainly buoys our efforts on the sponsorship side. In addition, we also have a merchandise business that we own and operate internally, an e-commerce business that's available for folks to come and buy Steelers merchandise directly from us. So the larger our following, the larger our global and international and domestic following, we feel like the more opportunities we'll have to sell Steelers merchandise.
How does the city of Pittsburgh benefit from these fans?
We have had, I think, an amazing track record in terms of attracting folks from outside of Pittsburgh to our games and to our events, really at Heinz Field. We did a study that looked at the years 2012 to 2017. Had Heinz Field over 1,000 events with 5.1 million attendees. Through a third-party analysis, we were able to determine really that a large number of those people were outside of Pittsburgh. If you take the local folks out of that study, $700 million in direct spending to the city of Pittsburgh by people who traveled in for those events. So really a huge impact.
So do you have anything new planned this season to keep this ball rolling, so to speak?
Definitely. We've started to look at other countries. 2 years ago, we started in China working through a platform called Weibo and utilizing a local Carnegie Mellon student to help us with some translations and to create some content that we can push out to that platform. This year, we've created a German Steelers Instagram and Facebook accounts. On both platforms, we are awarding a contest to bring in two folks to a game, all expenses paid. So we really hope to collect some great content both in those countries with those fans, and then when they visit here to Pittsburgh, and then show their experience in Pittsburgh back to those countries, and hopefully try to express how great it is, you know, how Pittsburgh is a great city, and certainly the Steelers are a great team to follow.
That's Steelers Vice President of Marketing, Ryan Huzhak. In Pittsburgh business headlines this week, Pittsburgh Penguin center Evgeny Malkin might be out of action due to injury, but he's entered a new game. The website Esports Insider reports Malkin has invested an undisclosed amount in the Pittsburgh Knights. Malkin joins the Steelers and rapper Wiz Khalifa as investors in the local esports team. And a grand opening was held this week on the north side for the new headquarters for Fortune 500 company Wabtec. The transportation company was formerly headquartered in Wilmerding. I'm Maria Scapoletto with the Pittsburgh Business Report on 90.5 WESA.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pittsburgh Opera is among the country's oldest opera companies, but now it's trying something no opera troupe ever has, a mobile app with audio audiences can use during performances. 90.5 WESA's Bill O'Driscoll reports.
So, you know the drill. You're at the opera, the show's about to start. You turn off your phone, right? Not necessarily anymore. Pittsburgh Opera is encouraging patrons to keep their smartphones on so that, for instance, during the overture to Mozart's Don Giovanni, they might hear, through their earbuds, something like this.
The overture is the only time until the Act 1 finale that we hear the orchestra in full.
Why an app? Well, only about 2% of Americans ever attend opera, and opera companies say they know why.
There are all the usual things like, oh, we don't know the language and we don't know how to dress.
Christopher Hahn is longtime general director of Pittsburgh Opera.
And of course, one of the big ones is, I don't really know what's going on.
Most classic operas are sung in Italian or German, so in the 1980s, troupes began projecting translations above the stage. That helped attendance, but in recent years, audiences have continued to age and dwindle. Many symphonies and opera troupes around the U.S. now use mobile apps to provide text and images to audiences during performances. One company specializing in apps for the performing arts is Instant Encore.
This type of audience engagement is still seen as rather edgy because the idea of bringing a device into the performance space, which some see almost as a sacred space.
Instant Encore Chief Marketing Officer Dave Dombrowski says its app called LiveNote might be especially useful to younger newcomers.
For some people, sitting down, being quiet, and staring at the stage is not enough.
Pittsburgh Opera has long provided audio commentary through earphones for visually impaired visitors. But offering audio to general audiences was risky, the opera's Hahn acknowledges.
The big taboo is that we are allowing in somebody's ear a spoken voice that is other than the sound from the stage.
The opera tested LiveNote last season with selected users from college students to retirees.
I thought it was a horrible idea.
Bob Sklabasi is a lifelong opera fan and former board member.
You just love the musicality of opera, and you think something like that's going to interfere with it, first of all for yourself and then for people around you also.
But developers worked to make the app unobtrusive. They limited the screen's brightness and made sure the audio didn't work unless the earbuds were plugged in. Mia Bonnewell is an opera singer and educator who wrote and voiced content for the app.
And you're just getting kind of the essentials through your earphone or earbud and on your screen.
The app, which is free to download, won converts including Sklabasi, who tested it at a dress rehearsal for La Boheme.
It didn't interfere with the musicality of the performance at all. You got a lot of background information that you normally wouldn't get.
Advocacy group Opera America gave $150,000 in grants toward developing the app. Pittsburgh Opera is not funded by ticket sales alone. Like many nonprofit arts groups, it gets more than half its revenue from grants and other contributions. But attendance reflects community support and prospects for future donors. Some experts agree the app shows promise. Brett Crawford runs the Arts Management and Technology Lab at Carnegie Mellon University.
I think that the LiveNote solution that Pittsburgh Opera has is really meeting the needs of a digitally interested audience.
How did the Don Giovanni audience like LiveNote? The app offered two tracks, one with the show's stage director commenting about the film noir visual style, the other with singer Mia Bonnewell offering pointers on the music. But Evelyn Young, a frequent opera goer, says she didn't immediately understand how the production commentary pertained to the opera.
That was very distracting for me, and after a while, I just turned it off because I couldn't focus on listening to the music.
Of course, as Pittsburgh Opera acknowledges, LiveNote might not be for everyone. I'm Bill O'Driscoll, 90.5 WESA News.
And there's always more to the story. WESA's arts and culture reporter Bill O'Driscoll is with us now. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
Bill, every arts organization is trying to grow audiences, attract new and younger fans. Can you give us a sense of the state of opera in Pittsburgh, not in the quality, but rather in attendance, engagement with audience?
Well, yeah. I mean, nationally, there's concern about opera that there's this, as I said in the story, you know, the figure used to be that the NEA compiled that about 3% of Americans attended opera at least once in a while. Now that figure is down to about 2%. In recent decades, there's a little concern about that. Pittsburgh Opera seems to be kind of maintaining its recent levels of attendance. In fact, last year, their attendance actually went up about 9%. But there's always concern about the future. You know, the subscriber base is aging. There's concern about in the future, are there going to be people coming?
Mm-hmm. Any sense of why that bump in attendance last year? Was it something they did or maybe just their selections of the operas?
It tends to go up and down by a bit each year. You know, their total attendance figures average around 26,000. And in any given year, it might go up by 1,000 or two. And it's probably just, you know, the shows that they're doing. Again, their core repertoire is this classic grand opera. You know, your La Boheme, Don Giovanni, which they're doing right now, things like that. The very famous operas, mostly from the 19th century. That's what draws most of the people still.
It seems like an age-old question. Can you enjoy opera or any art, even if you don't completely understand it?
Well, yeah, that's a big question for these classic art forms, you know, especially like a symphonic music, opera, ballet. People are a little bit afraid, the audience is in some cases. I'm not going to understand what's going on. I'm going to feel dumb. I'm going to get lost. I'm going to be bored, things like that. So the people that put on those, that produce those works are aware of that, and this is one way they're trying to meet that concern.
We heard from a couple of people attending a performance. You were there as well. What did you think?
Well, it was, they did a great job, I think, in making it unobtrusive in terms of you could be sitting right next to somebody and not even really know they were using this app. The screen was dimmed. People were using earbuds. If they want to use the audio, you don't have to use the audio. And so you would basically never know. I found it very useful in some cases. It pointed out a lot of musical subtleties that I probably wouldn't have caught on my own, not being familiar with that particular opera myself. You know, occasionally it would be, you'd find yourself reading the text rather than what was watching going on stage, and you felt that, did I miss something? You know, that's a pretty minor thing. I felt in general it was an enriching experience.
And obviously you didn't do a head count, but did you get a sense of many people using it?
Well, I didn't do a head count. Again, very hard to do in the theater because you can't really see who's using it. The opera did, though. They said 84 people used it at that performance. Now, some of them were opera employees who were there kind of testing it out. One of them was me. But there were other people. There are 84 people total, which is about 6% of the total audience. That's about what you would expect for a brand new thing that they're rolling out.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the descriptions? As an arts reporter, you're no stranger to opera, but did it teach you anything?
Oh yeah, there were some neat things about you know, they talked about how, for instance, the character Don Giovanni, the opera is Mozart's interpretation of the Don Juan legend about this manipulative kind of sexual predator, really. Mm-hmm. And the commentary pointed out how he would steal other characters' melodies for his own purposes. Mm-hmm. In terms of his manipulative strategies. So that was something I probably wouldn't have picked up on my own.
Do you think this was a logical next step to the translations projected above the stage that has been going on actually for years?
Yeah, they started doing that back in the 80s, and apparently it was very controversial when they started doing it. A lot of traditional audiences didn't like it. They felt it was kind of demeaning to suggest that they didn't understand what was going on. But now it's ubiquitous. It's hard to imagine opera without the translated lyrics above the screen. And so this is using a technology that's really quite new, maybe, you know, in the past 10 years, to try to, again, meet audiences halfway.
To what extent are the traditional arts organizations in town, symphony, ballet, others, experiencing similar challenges of attracting new and younger audiences?
Well, I think they all are to an extent. You know, you go to these shows and there's a lot of gray hairs there, not to put too fine a point on it, including mine. So everybody's concerned about it. And some of them are using, you know, lots of companies have apps. For instance, the Symphony has an app. It provides the sort of traditional program notes. You can buy tickets through it. You can get other notifications. But they're unlike the opera. They're not using like audio during the performance. That's the big jump with this particular app, I think.
Well, I believe the Live Note app actually was tried out in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Orchestra, a few years back. Any sense that the Pittsburgh Symphony is at least looking at that for something that's actually done during a performance?
Well, the Live Note app for the Symphony in Philadelphia was not audio either. It was just text and images.
Right.
So again, I haven't checked with the Symphony as to whether they're looking into something like this, but Pittsburgh Opera, I think, is the first one in town to take the step with the audio during the performance.
So give us an example of what other organizations are trying to do to sustain themselves, to grow, and to replenish listeners.
Well, some places are doing, they're trying to do newer works. They're trying to do, I'll give you an example, just an opera. Sure. That's what we're talking about here. Speaking of Philadelphia, again, the Philadelphia Opera changed to a festival format a couple years ago. And so instead of being a full season that runs for months, they condensed to a few weeks, and they made it kind of a happening to try to generate some excitement around it. Pittsburgh Festival Opera here in town, which is a much smaller opera company, did something similar a few years ago and seems to have had some success with it. Again, by concentrating sort of their season into just a few weeks, they make it kind of like a festival. And that's one way to do it. Another way is to make new works that kind of tie into the community, that use stories from your community.
Right.
Pittsburgh Opera does produce new operas, contemporary operas, and they do a good job with it. But again, those have a smaller audience in general. But it is one way to sort of kind of grow audiences for the future.
Bill, the end of your story, you note it might not be for everyone, but if the app gets a thumbs up from some, do opera managers think it's worth it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, they realize that not everybody's going to use this. I think the figures at, with companies that use this are like maybe 15-20% of the audience. Not everybody. It's not going to be for everyone for any number of reasons. I felt if they reach, you know, Pittsburgh Opera said, if we get 10-20% of the audience using this, we're going to feel like it's a success.
Bill O'Driscoll is WESA's arts and culture reporter. Thanks so much, Bill.
You're welcome, Kevin.
I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. According to the Federal Trade Commission, people reported losing a total of $1.48 billion to fraud last year. Those imposter scams, which include romance scams, people falsely claiming to be with the government, and others pretending to be someone they're not to get consumers' money, totaled $488 million in losses. And it turns out airports are often caught in the middle. Bob Kerlick is Vice President of Media Relations for the Allegheny County Airport Authority. He's on the line from Pittsburgh International. Bob, thanks for making the time.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to be here.
Bob, you wrote about the airport's experience with scammers for the authority's news service, Blue Sky. You specifically focused on what the FBI calls romance or confidence fraud. Tell us what it looks like for airport employees.
Well, first of all, it's really sad. And the reason we drew attention to it on our Blue Sky news site, which is blueskypit.com, is because it continues to happen. So we want to raise awareness about this issue to get the word out there, because that's the only way that we can combat this thing. So what happens is, you know, people will get scammed online through Facebook or some other social media platform, and they'll start talking with these folks online, and they'll pursue what they think is a relationship with somebody. And ultimately, usually they'll send them some sort of money, usually for a plane ticket or something that the other side claims. And what we see is people showing up here, you know, either waiting at the gate or waiting at right next to our customer service desk with flowers or luggage that to meet their loved one, and no one ever shows up. And it's incredibly sad, and we see it happen here all the time. Our customer service rep said, you know, we talked to them about this story, and they said they see it once a month or more of people showing up and just waiting for people that never come.
Right. The customer service employees, they're often the ones talking to these victims. What do they do in that situation?
Well, it's tough for them, you know, and usually, you know, when I interviewed a couple of our reps for the story, you know, she said, you know, she talked to, there was one gentleman, and he brought showed up at the customer service desk, and he had a big bouquet of flowers, and he said, I'm meeting my online girlfriend, you know, we're meeting for the first time. And she said he was kind of a shy guy, you know, not very big. And, you know, he said, we've been talking for 6 months. And she says, well, you know, we waited all day, and nobody came. And then, you know, he came every day with flowers for a whole week. And so our customer service reps, you know, they try to ask people questions. You know, sometimes people were coming forward, other times people weren't. Finally, this gentleman, you know, decided to, you know, to engage with our customer service rep. And he said, well, you know, I've been talking with this lady online, and our customer service rep said, you know, did you send her money? And he said, well, yeah, I wired her money for a plane ticket. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I hate to tell you this, but we see a lot of online scams. And the guy just couldn't believe it. And he kept coming back. And finally, you know, on the last day, she said, you know, our customer service reps, you know, you should really report this to the police. I think you've been scammed. And then he started crying, and our customer service rep started crying. So, you know, it's sad. I mean, we try to, you know, find out as much information as we can, really try to show them, you know, hey, you need to go to the police to report this, you know, and because a lot of people, frankly, are embarrassed. They don't want to go to police. They, you know, once they figure out what's happened.
Right. Has it become part of the training, unfortunately, for the customer service employees to how to deal with these victims?
Yeah, I mean, so our customer service reps, anytime, you know, we have people that are in distress, certainly our customer service reps are trained to handle that, and this is no different. What they've been able to find out with this, you know, with these scams, is really it's just trying to ask, you know, questions of people. You know, who are you waiting for? Are you sure they're coming? You know, do you have a specific flight number? Can I see the boarding pass? Because oftentimes, you know, the folks that have been scammed, they'll have been sent emails. You know, supposedly their boyfriend or girlfriend who's coming, you know, will send them a boarding pass. But usually it's a boarding pass that has been photoshopped or coming from a destination that we don't have. For instance, that gentleman was waiting for someone from Spain. Well, we don't have a nonstop flight to Spain. So, you know, right away, there's a red flag, right? So, you know, you ask questions, you know, the specifics. You know, there was one gentleman who showed up and he said, well, my girlfriend's here in the airport somewhere. You know, she told me she was here. So finally, our customer service rep said, well, can I just call this person? Because the lady kept claiming she was lost. Or she gets on the phone with the customer service rep and the lady says, well, and the customer service rep said, well, you know, tell me exactly where you are. We'll send someone to meet you. We'll get an escort over here to meet your friend here. And she says, well, I don't recognize anything where I'm at. He says, well, where are you standing right now? What, is there a store? And she said, I don't know. And then she hung up the phone. So clearly it was, you know, sometimes people would just, they don't want to believe it. And mm-hmm. So, you know, our customer service reps just, you know, do the best that they can to try to, you know, bring light to the situation.
All right. So your customer service reps, they're responding, they're reacting to people getting ripped off. But can the airport do anything to stop the scammers?
You know, that's something we're looking at right now. Right now, the best thing that we can do is really raise awareness, because by the time they get here, they've already sent the money. Mm, you know, it's, right. You know, we can contact police for them. You know, they can contact police, but you know, there's not a lot, you know, we can do other than, you know, try to help them as best we can, you know, comfort them, give them some direction on what to do. But by the time they get here, usually the money has already been sent. And, you know, and it's not just romance scams. You know, we see those, but we also see people buying things. Puppy scams are a big one. We see people that have sent money to people that are supposedly sending them dogs in a crate. You know, people say, and then they'll try to get the people to send them more money. Well, you know, we need to send it in an air-conditioned crate, or the crate needs to be heated. Can you send me more money? The airline wouldn't take it. We need to upgrade the cargo, you know, something like that. Right. And they'll keep sending them money. And then they'll come looking for, you know, these puppies that are supposed to arrive. And of course, none are here. So, you know, we see that happen a lot as well.
Right. Just a minute or so left, Bob. You mentioned advice to go to police and mentioned that some folks are embarrassed. Do you find out if anybody is going to the police briefly?
Unless they come back and circle back with us, no. So usually, you know, county police here are at the airport. They're great. So if they're filing a report with county police, you know, we may be aware of that. But, you know, a lot of times people will go home and file a report with their local police departments. And ultimately, I think this gets filtered up to the FBI, because they're the ones who track this, because oftentimes these are international scams. You know, a lot of times these guys are in another country. A lot of times these are coming from Africa. You know, in fact, the New York Times actually had a big story a couple months ago about people stealing the online identities, posing as soldiers overseas. And we see a lot of that as well. So, you know, like I said, we do the best we can. We try to encourage them to make a report. And, you know, if there's anything, there's also some advocacy groups out there for online victim scams. You know, we'd like to try to tell them to get in touch with them also. But again, raising awareness, that's the biggest thing we can do.
This piece is one in a series of how our personal cybersecurity affects the airport and vice versa. In a sentence or two, can you tell us what else you are or will be reporting on?
So obviously, October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, for people that don't know. So, you know, we've been chronicling a series of stories on how people can better protect themselves online. And we're going to continue to do that. We offered online tips for people connecting the public Wi-Fi, you know, what you should be protecting yourself from online. And we're going to continue to do that throughout the month of October, because it's incredibly important for all of us.
And where can they find the stories?
At blueskypit.com. That's blueskypit.com. That's our in-house news service. We launched it about a year ago. We're really excited. You can go on that site and sign up for our newsletter, which comes out on Tuesdays. So please do. We have some good stuff on there.
And we'll have a link to that on our website, wesa.fm. Bob Kerlick is Vice President of Media Relations for the Allegheny County Airport Authority. Thanks so much, Bob.
Thank you, Kevin.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, new research shows that 1 in 6 young people ages 10 to 17 in Pennsylvania is obese. That's well above the national average. We'll discuss what's being done in our region to reduce those numbers and help children lead healthier lives. If you missed anything from today's program, or you would like to catch up on past shows, please visit wesa.fm/confluence. or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski. Production assistance from Julia Zankovich. The editor and producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.